And welcome to a Ladies Who London podcast. I'm Emily Dell.
And I'm Alex Lacey, and we're London. No, we're not. Yes, we are. What are we? Qualified London Blue Badge tourist guides. There we go.
We are London. Oh, gosh, you got me right off sync here. Each week, we bring to you some of the best bits of London.
We talk about our favourite people, places, and events with a bit of information, a lot of laughs, and a whole lot of fun.
We can be found on Instagram at Ladies Who London Podcast and on our website, skydemily.com.
And alexlacey.com, as well as our dedicated website, ladieswholondon.com, for more information about the podcast, the show notes and all of that kind of stuff. Slicker at the end than the beginning.
Goodness me. Hello, Alex.
Hello, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm very tired. It's unbelievable. I can't. Everyone is saying, aren't they? All the guys are saying, what's happened?
It's gone from 0 to 60. Exactly. There was no kind of build up or you know, bang. Like, this is what's going to happen. It was just boom. Yeah. I mean, which is wonderful. It's so lovely to see so many people back on the streets and so many people looking at buildings where you know that, this is the first time they've seen this building or seen that. It's crazy, back in London.
I literally cannot keep up with emails. I just cannot keep up.
You're just such a wanted lady, Alex.
By the police more than anything.
Exactly. Who are these emails from?
There's loads of people coming in going, hi, can I do a tour with you tomorrow? And I'm like, no. It's so hard. I've got tons of emails to respond to. They're not enough hours in the day. It's mad.
Goodness me, like, in such a fortunate position. So many other industries haven't bounced back like this. We're incredibly lucky.
Yeah, absolutely. We shouldn't moan, but we're going to anyway, because we're British and that's what we
exactly,
do.
Exactly, yeah. That's what we bloody love to do.
Hello, listeners. Welcome back. I hope you've had a lovely week as well. I hope you're not as busy as me and Em. You wait till we get to the winter and we've got nothing on, or we'll be moaning about how quiet it is.
Exactly.
It's the beauty of tourism is the seasons are very, very different. There we go. Have you got any shout outs this week, Em?
I have got a couple of shout outs actually. We've had some lovely messages, one of which is from a guy called Dave Snap. Snape.
There's an E on the end.
And he said, sorry, Dave. He didn't say that. He said, hi, I only recently discovered your podcast and what a find. I'm working my way through from the start and have just listened to the Match Girls Strike episode. Brilliant. A friend of mine used to live in the Bow Quarter, so I spent a lot of time there. In fact, I used to stay there when he was on holiday. Free gym, spa and pool.
Ooh, oh, nice. Friends in high places, Dave.
Yeah. A fascinating place, steeped in history. And as a child of a striking minor in the 80s, it's somewhere I was really interested in finding more information about. Thanks for the episode.
Oh, thanks,
very
Dave.
Welcome, Dave Snape.
Thank you. Snape, not Snap.
Snap.
And we've had a lovely message from Kate Adams as well. Hi, Kate.
Hi, Kate.
She says she's been catching up on our podcast and listened to the one about the Windmill Theatre. And she's found a great little film about Sheila. She was a woman to a racing car driver. You may well have seen it, but if not, and then she put the link in there. So we might have to put that on our socials because I did have a little look at the film. I didn't get through the whole thing because I didn't have time for a common theme in my life at the moment. But she said, really enjoying all of your shows. The gorier, the better. Well, Kate, we've had a run of gory stuff, so we're trying to keep it a little less bloodthirsty. Well, you never know, give it a couple more weeks, but thank you so much for getting in touch. We really appreciate that.
Fabulous. We've also had one from help me with the pronunciation. Rocio. I was completely wrong. So she said that she's a big fan of the podcast and she has been since day one, and it's her company every Wednesday. So we were her company, basically.
Hello.
Because she listens to us every Wednesday.
Or Thursday, as it was the other week.
Thursday, yeah, if you're listening last week. And she said that randomly she got her husband a box of cookies, which just... coincidentally coincided with the episode on biscuits last week, and she sent a picture of these beautiful biscuits. Oh my goodness me, your husband was a lucky man.
Can we share them, please? We'd like some.
Yeah, gosh, they're absolutely gorgeous.
And we've had a lovely email from Gina Marie on Instagram as well, who says, hello, with the Queen's Jubilee coming up, will there be a special episode maybe? I watched a special about the televised coronation and wondered if there are any other stories in the past about past coronations and things that may have happened. Gina Marie, there definitely are some awesome stories about previous coronations. So I think, Emily, what do you think next week we do? Because next week is the Jubilee week, Yeah, it is really, isn't it? It starts.
It is, yes. First weekend of June.
Trooping is on the 2nd, and then it goes through that weekend. So, should we do next week? We're not going to spin the wheel. We'll just do a coronation special. How about that?
Yeah, let's do it.
Because there are some brilliant stories about coronations that have happened in previous years.
Ones that have gone wrong.
Bits that have gone wrong, the more I think about it, the more I'm like, yeah, there's great stories. Right, that's what we're going to do next week. So we're going to tell some coronation stories. I think that's a good plan, because we were toying with what to do for the Jubilee and if we were going to do anything. And our podcast isn't really that kind of thing, is it? It's not about, oh, let's talk about Buckingham Palace, or let's talk about the Queen. That's not quite our bag.
No, so we'd like to go down the niche avenues.
Yeah, so like Gina Marie, I love that idea of you know, kind of little stories from previous coronations. I think that could definitely fit in with what we do. So yeah, let's do that. I think that'd be brilliant.
Brilliant.
Yeah. All right, cool. That's for next week, so we don't have to worry about the wheel.
But what did we do last week, Alex?
Last week was biscuits, wasn't it?
It was biscuits. We were dunking biscuits.
Biscuits at the biscuit factory around the corner from here, over in Bermondsey, the Peak Freen biscuit factory. And there was a lot there I didn't know about, you know, custard creams being invented there. And I really enjoyed it. I thought it was fantastic.
Oh, thank you.
So our podcast pedestal toppers were, and I really liked the one that you went for, actually, which was the kind of, was it a Christmas tin, or was it just a normal like biscuity?
I think it probably would have been advertised for Christmas.
Right. Yeah.
Diving into it, there were so many more that I didn't even know existed. So that I put the picture that I put up on Instagram in the end was four tins that fitted together to create a castle.
Oh.
Yeah. Really, really beautiful. So yeah, so I went for that.
And yeah, it was the tins that fit together to be a little robot, wasn't it? The one that
just a a tin to fit biscuits in, but yeah, you could also use it for something else, a little toy. Yeah.
And I went for the joy slide, which was the slide that still exists in the local park and was put in place by the factory as part of their kind of social engagement and things that their workers could do, which I thought was really sweet. I think it's been changed a bit since then, but it's the joy slide. And you were saying how there's, you know, the plaque of the people on there who kind of created it. And it was very, very close this week. Very close. It was almost Brexit numbers. Not quite. It was 53-47. Who's won this week, Emily? Who do you think?
It can't be me again, surely.
It's not. It's me.
Right. I was going to say, I'm going to have to kind of slip off this winning streak somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, you were close. You were close. There was only a few percent in it, but it's mine.
No, good for you. And I think for the joy slide, it should be up there because it was such a wonderful thing that was made and has been made again. So
I might have to go there this week and see if I can have a go on it. I'll probably get stuck or break it, but you know.
No, I took Carmen there quite recently, actually.
Yeah. So there we go. One to me.
Woohoo! So I don't know what the scores are now, but I think you've still got a couple to go before.
Yeah, all right.
Before you're reaching me. No, I think actually I'm only two ahead of you.
Anyway, moving on. I think you're one ahead
now.
Oh,
sorry.
Anyway,
can I just say, I don't want to escape from the subject of biscuits too rapidly. Because I don't know if you remember me saying last week that if anybody wanted to go to the museum, although it was like incredibly niche, and obviously you have to live in London. Well, I mean, you could visit here for that.
How many hundreds of people took you up on that?
Two.
200 people. That's impressive.
Two people. And that doesn't include you or I. So, yeah, I'm quite impressed that two people already have said yes. So, but if anybody else wants to, I'm going to open this up for maybe another week.
You're assuming I want to.
Oh, yeah, that's true, actually. Do you not want to?
Yes, of course I do.
Of course you do. Trying to find time in your schedule. That's going to be the issue.
November. Let's do it then.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's your pet project then. You can sort that out.
Yes, exactly. So let me know.
Fantastic. Well, on to this week's podcast.
Oh, yes. What are we talking about?
Well, this week, it was after I did that tour with Rosie. Hi, Rosie, who got very excited that we gave her a shout out on last week's podcast. So you can have Rosie. Another one, Rosie. Here you go. write in again next week and we'll see if we can do a hat trick. And it was when we landed on, where did we land? Belgravia, wasn't it? That yes. We landed on this week. And this is where Sophia Duleep Singh was born. And so she was kind of top of my mind because we'd just done that walk. And I really love her story. And it links in beautifully with one from a few weeks back, which was the Koh-i-Noor diamond.
That's such a good story.
That story is quite a tragic one. And it's quite an eye-opening one because people don't really know that story. The whole nature of gifting to monarchs a bit awkward because it's not always gifted in the way that we might imagine. It's more like, I'll have that, thank you. Oh, you're giving it to me as a gift, are you? Lovely. It's more that kind of thing. And that's what it was with the Koh-i-Noor. And that image of that poor little boy sort of having to hand over his kingdom and this diamond and then giving it to her in person when he came to England. It's quite a sad story. So we're going to pick up that story of Duleep Singh. He's come to London and I don't know where we left his story, actually. Can't remember. I think we just sort of said, he then lived in England and hung out with the Queen's son, and the two of them were apparently boys on the town quite a lot in their youth. They would go out and him and Bertie, who later became King Edward the one of them, which one? Seventh? Eighth?
Seventh.
Seventh, thank you very much. I saw him today at Windsor, actually.
Did you?
He's still there, yeah. He's still lying in the same spot he was for the last, a few years anyway. And the two of them were good buddies, and they'd go out kind of carousing and womanizing by the sounds of it and having a good old kind of bachelor time on the town. And Duleep Singh does settle down and gets married. And he has a couple of daughters. And one of them is this girl called Sophia. So she's called Sophia Duleep Singh, and she's born in 1876.
Do you think, to name her Sophia or like Sapphire, is he kind of like holding on to
I don't know
the jewels past, the jewels
know.
Kind of
who knows, you'd have to ask him. Good luck,
Sapphire.
He's not around anymore. She's soft, so if you read it written down, it's Sophia, but it was pronounced Sophia. So Sophia Duleep Singh. So she's good pedigree. She's the daughter of this Maharaja. And because when Duleep Singh came to the UK, he was kind of scooped up by Queen Victoria and she sort of had him as a kind of like a godson, really, that sort of thing, or at least a sort of ward, if you like. She was quite enchanted by this young exotic guy. And we know, Queen Victoria, for all her faults, was very, very intrigued by India and the Indian subcontinent and, had things... I'm sure everybody's heard of at least the film of Victoria and Abdul that came out a few years ago that told the story of one of these servants who was in her court called Abdul, and he taught her Hindi, and she would have curries on the table. She kind of, she really went all in for it. So, she found this Duleep Singh when he came quite exotic, but also very intriguing, and she would, learn from these people as well. So despite all the kind of grimness of the Victorian era, there are some good bits that she was willing to kind of to learn from. And so Sophia, when she's born, she ends up being a goddaughter of Queen Victoria as well, and she ends up living later on in her life in Hampton Court Palace in a grace and favour apartment. Now, you know what a grace and favour apartment is, don't you, Em?
Yes. If you're working, if you're staff, basically, that's where you're going to be living.
It's not really staff. It sort of is, I guess. It's kind of, it's property that's owned by the monarch in which they allow someone to live rent-free, often as sort of gratitude for services, I guess, or if they haven't got the money to kind of look after them or to support themselves, then if they're linked to the monarch in some way, so being a goddaughter, that kind of thing. And she was described by the lady who wrote the her biography as an aristocratic pauper, which is a really interesting thing because she was the it girl at the time. She was on every guest list. She was going to every party. everybody wanted her hairstyle. I mean, she was the Jennifer Aniston of the day. Yeah, yeah. She was the woman. And Anita Anand, who's the lady who wrote her biography a few years back, described her as, she said, for the first sort of section of her life, she spent as much time as humanly possible trying to become as vacuous as she could. She was basically a socialite.
She just didn't want the attention.
Yeah, well, no, she was just a socialite. She didn't care about anything. She, you know, was this aristocratic girl who went to parties and lived the high life and just wasn't really engaged with anything in society or anything like that. So what she'll later become is really quite a turnaround. So she's born in Belgravia. Her father is this Maharaja who's come over to England. Her grandfather is Ranjit Singh, the guy that we chatted about a couple of weeks ago, the Lion of the Punjab. And so this is quite a big, you know, pedigree, really. As time goes on, her father, Duleep Singh, starts to sort of question this treaty that he's been forced to sign when he was really young. And he started to become quite bitter about it. And started to rebel a little bit. So he's come over. He's been here for quite a while. He's been best buds with Bertie. He's got married. He's had kids. And it's after this that he starts to do that thing. You know, when people get a little bit older sometimes, they start to kind of look at their roots a bit. And they start to go, where am I from? And what does it mean? And all that kind of thing. And he starts to get really bitter about the whole, you know, East India Company taking his land away from him. And he gets quite bitter against the Queen particularly. And he starts saying to her, you know, why didn't you intervene in this? Why didn't you stand up for me as this young ruler? You're a ruler as well. Like, why didn't you do anything?
Oh, God. I bet it's like, well, you know, I've got nothing to lose. I might as well, you know, tell her how I feel.
Yeah, but he's also got everything to lose because he's living a very nice life in England. He's, you know, and he's not, you know, he's got no, there's nothing for him to go back to in India, really, although he wants to. So this is what he decides to do. He packs up his whole family. And he says, right, we're going to go back to the Punjab and I'm going to reclaim my birthright. Now, this is going to be, I mean, it's almost no chance at all he'd be able to do that. And if he did, it would probably be bitter and bloody and not very pleasant. And they were stopped en route and were arrested. And this is Sophia's first arrest. I say first. She'll get arrested later again. And she's aged 9 at this point. Wow. So she's really young. Now, at this point, Duleep Singh goes, I just can't. And he dumps his family and goes off, just goes off alone and ends up in exile in France. Yeah, yeah. He just can't, he can't handle it. You know, let's face it.
Well, is that because he doesn't want to get them in any more trouble?
No, it's just that he cannot handle what's happened to him as a kid. He cannot handle this legacy and what happened to him. And realistically, we talked last time about he was a really young boy when all this happened. So it's probably this trauma coming to the surface. I don't know. But anyway, he ends up sort of exiled in France. And at this point, this is where Queen Victoria does step into the fray. And she scoops
time,
up...
Vicky.
Well, I know, right? Come on, Vic. Better late than never. But she scoops up these children who obviously don't have a father around anymore, and she brings them back because I believe their mother has died by this point, possibly. I need to double check that, but I think that's the case. And she scoops them all up, she brings them back, and she takes control of their schooling. She pays for their education. She hosts the girls' coming out party at Buckingham Palace, this whole debutante thing. And so this is where Sophia comes into this thing of being an aristocrat, being in the upper echelons of society, but having no cash, because let's face it, that, you know, the dad's got the money and Queen Vic is putting her up and all that sort of stuff, but not really bankrolling, you know, to the extent that you might expect their kind of pedigree. But what Vic is saying with all of this, that she's, you know, she's paying for their schooling and this coming out party, is that Vic is kind of saying, doesn't matter what your dad's done or is doing, your position at court, I've got that covered. Don't worry, you're maintaining that. Doesn't matter what he's up to, you're safe. You're okay. I'm not going to kick you out. All that sort of stuff, which is, you know, something.
Maybe she's feeling a bit guilty.
Maybe. Who knows? Maybe. Yeah. But also, she was very fond of Duleep, and it stands to reason she'd be very fond of the girls as well. So who knows? So this is where Sophia becomes this socialite, and she goes to everything in the opening of an envelope. She starts trends and, you know, she just spends her 20s having an absolute whale of a time and being a party girl and all that kind of thing. And then something changes in 1903. Now, 1903, we've changed monarch. Queen Vic dies in 1901. So Edward VII, who's this guy that was hanging out with her dad, becomes king and also becomes Emperor of India. Now, in 1903, they decide they're going to travel to Delhi for the Delhi Durbar. And this is a huge sort of celebration of his coronation and his role as the Emperor of India. You know, as problematic as that is, but we're not dealing too much with that today. And Sophia and her sisters, they kind of go, "Ooh, would really quite like to go to that." And everyone's going, "Don't recommend it. You know, the circumstances under which your dad left India, everything that's gone on since then, you could, you know, security's an issue. Just don't go. Just don't go." Yeah. And she thinks, "Ah, stuff it." And so she and her sisters go anyway.
Wow. Quite like how old are they at this point?
So this is 1903. She would be 27-ish, 27, 28, something like that.
Okay. And when they say they're going to go, are they going to get on the same boat with the king?
I don't know how they go, to be honest. From what I've read, they kind of sneak in. So I don't think it was an official visit. Right. They obviously do their own thing. And she goes there and she wants to watch everything. She wants to kind of go back to this country that she's never been to, but that her heritage is from. Mm. And for the first time, she experiences outright racism. Now, I'm not to say that she hadn't experienced any racism up until that point, but this is where she sees racism against, you know, whole groups of people. There are hundreds, thousands of people that she sees there who look like her, but are treated as second-class citizens. And she sees them starving and she sees them suffering and she sees, you know, that they're fighting against this yoke of British oppression, this emperor and this empire that's going on. And, you know, the empire is something that is we've spoken a few times about how it's quite an uncomfortable bit of history because we basically, in our fabulous role as Brits who know best, charge around the world going, "Oh, heathens, don't do that, do this." And then, "Oh, we're now going to bring in our thing and use all the money and all the resources and you can just sit there and sit in a, you know, pool of water." And that's what she sees. She suddenly sees, "Oh, wait, hang on. This kind of aristocratic life that I'm leading back at home and all these people I'm hanging out with are sort of subjugating the, you know, the people where I come from." And she hears this, well, she kind of feels that, because there is a fight for, you know, emancipation in India, for people to have the right to rule themselves and that kind of thing. And she hears this sort of cry for some sort of voice to stand up and speak out for them, which will later come in, you know, in the shape of Gandhi and other people. But at this point, that, you know, there's nobody really doing that. And at the same time, her sister, Bamba, had quite a bad experience. Bamba had managed to get a place to study medicine in Chicago at Northwestern University. And she went over there and they did not take kindly to a woman at university, least of all studying medicine, and a brown woman at that. And having secured this place and gone over there, they basically said, "Yeah, you're not coming in." And they sent her home. Oh, yeah. Gosh. With a sort of, you know, "Take note, upstart. How dare you do this?" So at this point, she's like, "Actually, maybe not everything is as kind of glittering and fabulous as I thought." And that her 20s spent having fabulous parties and not really seeing any kind of other side to it. Mm. She suddenly is like, she switched on to this. She suddenly goes, "Wait, there's a thing here." So she comes back to England after the Delhi Durbar and she's obviously a little bit kind of discombobulated, I guess. And she hears that similar sort of cry for a voice and to be heard amongst the women who are fighting for the right to vote, the suffragettes and the suffragists. And Sophia Duleep Singh, princess, Indian princess, royalty, living in England, goddaughter to Queen Victoria, gets involved with the suffrage movement.
Come on.
I know. Now, I don't know, have we spoken much about the suffragettes and the suffragists?
Not that much, actually.
I don't know that we have.
We've touched upon it a little bit.
Yeah.
But we certainly haven't done a whole episode.
No, and in case anyone out there is unsure what the difference is between suffragettes and suffragists, at the start, there was sort of one thread of suffrage, of women's suffrage, trying to push forward that right to vote. And they start to disagree on the best ways to do it. You have the suffragette movement, very famously headed up by Emmeline Pankhurst, who go down the route of, well, the motto was deeds, not words. So it went down the route of setting bombs and setting fire to things and smashing windows and cutting communication wire and setting fire to politicians' houses. And the other strand was the suffragettes. And the suffragettes were about peaceful protest. So they carried on with protesting, with banners, with marches, and you had the kind of divide. Now, the suffragettes, some of you, I'm sure you know, that they were labelled terrorists by the parliament, by the police, because, I mean, essentially that's what they were doing, is they were, you know, causing societal unrest. So that's how they've always been characterised. And Sophia goes down that route. She goes down the suffrage route. So she gets involved, and due to her status, she gets quite quickly enveloped into Emmeline Pankhurst's inner circle, which is a very privileged place to be. And also, you know, she's quite useful because she is a famous face.
Well, of course.
You know, everyone's got her hairstyle. And suddenly she is a famous name in the cause of the whole thing. She supports the WSPU, which is the Women's Social and Political Union, and that is the militant bit. And when they become militant, she's like, yeah, I'm with you, we're doing this. And her
she's got some fire, hasn't she?
I mean, she really has. And I love that, you know, because we've talked about people before, and I don't know if we've talked about Millicent Fawcett. I think we should, because she's amazing. Mm. But we've talked about people where they are born and they have that fire immediately in there. The minute they're kind of able to sort of walk and talk, they're like, right, I want to do this, and this is my thing. And I kind of love it with Sophia that she's not like that at all. She spends ages just doing her own thing, and it's something, you know, it takes an event to turn her around and go, oh, hang about, this warrants my attention, and I need to pull my socks up a bit. Now, of course, all of these socialite aristocratic friends she's been hanging out with are quite embarrassed by all of this. They are
what are you doing, Sophia? We saw you in the papers. Emmeline Pankhurst, what are you doing?
Exactly. And of course, you know, Emmeline Pankhurst is out there getting arrested and all that kind of thing. And Sophia's the same. So I said earlier, her first arrest at age 9 is definitely not her last, because she goes along the suffragette route and she gets arrested and all that kind of stuff. And one thing that she did, and I think this is the biggest stand that she makes, is she would stand outside Hampton Court Palace selling the suffragette paper.
Really?
Yes. And there's a picture of her there with a sandwich board standing outside this place that, you know, belongs to the Queen, and she is getting for free as part of her, you know, goddaughter to the Queen thing. And she's like, I don't care, there's bigger fish to fry. And she's standing out there selling the newspaper at the entrance to Hampton Court Palace.
Oh my gosh. Do you think that King Edward VII kind of pulled her aside at all and said, look, what are you doing?
I mean highly likely. Had,
yeah.
Highly likely.
Conversations with royalty about it.
Almost certainly, yeah. Mm. Because she didn't really lose her position, as far as I'm aware. I don't think she lost her position in the court too much. She would also, as well as selling this paper, she would go and leaflet and canvass in places like Richmond and Kingston as well. And across the country, occasionally she'd go and travel around a bit and go leafleting and canvassing in other places. So, you know, Richmond and Kingston would be very well used to having an Indian princess turn up on their doorstep and hand them a flyer about, you know, votes for women, which is amazing. She didn't just stop there. She also became involved with a group called the Women's Tax Resistance League. And this is exactly as it sounds. The slogan was, no vote, no tax. So essentially, if you don't let me vote, I ain't going to pay tax, because why should I? Why should I pay money to you lot when I don't get a say in what that money's used for or what happens in this country? She refused to pay tax for many years, and she was arrested and prosecuted several times over this too.
Goodness. I know. Do you know what's going on with her sister at this point?
I don't actually know too much about her sisters, no. She's got two sisters, Bamba and, I can't remember the other one's name. I don't actually know too much about what happens with them. Probably worth a little look in, actually. I don't, if they were involved in the suffrage movement as well, I haven't come across them in the same way. Now, in 1910, something happens in the suffrage movement, which is a really, really big deal. It's the Black Friday March. There had been a bill that had been put to Parliament, and they'd sort of been told that this was a bill that was going to give them some rights in terms of voting. And Emmeline Pankhurst and the suffragettes had actually pulled back on militancy. They'd stopped doing stuff for a few months because they'd said, OK, well, if you're going to give us that, we'll just kind of hold off for a bit and see what happens. And on this one day, they heard that this vote had actually, at the last minute, had been nixed. It just been the guy who'd promised it to them had scrapped it. And 300 suffragettes who'd been meeting just around the corner marched on Parliament to protest this failure. And what they faced on that day was quite a lot of unexpected violence from the police. A lot of these women, these suffrage women, were sort of upper middle class or upper class people, because often this is, you don't often find the upper class people coming out in support of the lower classes, but for the suffrage movement you do, because a lot of the working class women just simply could not afford to take time off to go and protest. Much as they wanted that vote and they wanted that emancipation, they just physically couldn't, because if they didn't work, they didn't feed their kids, and it was as simple as that. So a lot of the women were upper class women, not all of them. There were some women who were able to go along from the lower middle and working classes, but generally it was the upper classes. And what they'd done on this day, because this guy knew that there was going to be a bit of argy-bargy from him having nixed the bill, had brought in a whole load of police officers from places like Whitechapel. Now, Whitechapel was a very, when you say Whitechapel to people, they go, ooh, Jack the Ripper. Yeah, and Jack the Ripper, 1888, not very long, well, 25 years or so before this. But the Whitechapel, it gives you a sense of what it's like there. Very, very poor. The police over there handle things very differently to the way that police would handle stuff in affluent Westminster and Knightsbridge and Kensington. So normally they'd treat them all with, very sort of gentle.
Could you stop doing that, please?
Excuse me, madam, move along. But they brought in these Whitechapel police, and these Whitechapel police, and they didn't, give two hoots.
The batons are out.
Oh, yeah. And they got battered, like really badly battered by them, and quite unexpected violence, but also a lot of sexual assault, which came out later that there'd been a lot of sexual assault during this march on Black Friday. And Sophia herself fought off a police officer who was beating up one of her sister suffragettes.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So she, she's not just standing back and whatever, she's getting stuck in and she's literally punching this guy. On another occasion, she threw herself on the front windscreen of the Prime Minister's car as he was driving past with a leaflet pressed on it.
What?
So she's gone from being this little wolf, well, I don't know what wallflower necessarily, but this socialite with, no cares in the world, to this girl who is willing to fling herself onto a moving car to achieve the aims that she and the group want.
So God, it's so interesting.
It's a 180, absolute 180 from where she was.
It really is. It's that kind of, you can imagine just her thinking that this life is how everybody is living. You've got the glitz and glamour and there's no worries in the world. And then to suddenly go to India and see all that poverty and hardship and be like, actually, I'd much prefer to have a life where I'm pushing myself for others.
Mm. Absolutely. And as well as the suffrage, she, whenever she found groups of Indians or Sikhs anywhere in the UK, wherever she found them, she would endeavour to try and help them in some way.
Mm.
Because it was that thing of, suddenly she'd realised that there are differences here and they need to be counteracted. She carried on. So when this Black Friday thing happened, and this really started a lot of the, the militancy kind of was upped by the suffragettes, because suddenly they realised that, the gloves were off, really. And in 1911, she was fined £3 for illegally keeping a coach and helper. Now, in order to keep a, and actually, I think she was fined for having dogs as well, keeping dogs. In order to do all of these things, you had to have a licence, and she refused. She just said, look, I'm not paying for a licence for these things if I'm not allowed the right to vote. Why should I have to pay for this stuff? So it's on top of resisting the tax, she's resisting just paying for the licenses that they had in place. So on this occasion, a bailiff arrived at her house to collect the money. She refused, shut the door in his face. They came in anyway, and he took her diamond ring and he sold it to get the money for it. Now, what I love about this is that, and I don't know which friend this was. I don't know if it was her pre-suffrage friend or one of her suffrage friends went out and bought it and gave it back to her.
Wow.
I know. Really lovely. Really Gosh. Lovely.
That is really nice. Would you do that for me?
Yeah, sure. I'd definitely buy you back your cubic zirconia ring, yeah.
You'd probably give me a gummy bear ring, wouldn't you?
I probably would, yeah. Keep the ring for myself.
You have to give up your diamond then, but here you go.
And you asked about royalty, and I don't know too much about her relationship with Edward VII. I suspect that there would have been a decent relationship there because of his relationship with her father, but it clearly soured because by the time it gets to George V is quite a powerful enemy of hers. And the other person who really takes against her, for obvious reasons, is Winston Churchill as well. Mm. Winston Churchill gets talked about a lot in terms of, you know, what an amazing guy he is and how saintly he is and all that kind of thing. I mean, you have to take everybody with a bit of black and white, a bit of a pinch of salt. Winston Churchill's not all 100% good. He was against women having the right to vote. He was against Indian self-rule. He's a complex character, like most big people, you know, in that kind of arena are. So she's gone from being the goddaughter to Queen Victoria to having, you know, quite a lot of the establishment pretty anti her. And then World War One hits in 1914. And this is one of the things that really helps the women's suffrage movement, because at the end of the war, all these men come back from the war and the women have been doing the jobs, and there's definitely a movement of, come on, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours kind of thing. So during World War One, she volunteered as a nurse, and she worked in Isleworth, which is out West London. I mean, not too far from Hampton Court, to be honest. And she treated wounded Indian soldiers who'd been evacuated from the front. And what was really lovely about it is they would come in from the front, they would come into this hospital, and all of a sudden, sitting next to them on a chair and tending to them is the granddaughter of Ranjit Singh, this line of the Punjab who they still to this day, people in the Punjab idolise Ranjit Singh, and they cannot believe that his granddaughter is there tending their wounds and healing them.
Wow, that must have been such a weird moment.
Yeah, it would have been so, you know, such an incredible thing to suddenly, yeah, see her there and be like, oh my goodness, this is, yeah, it'd be really weird, wouldn't it?
Yeah, really surreal. Weird.
So, of course, as we know, some women get the right to vote in 1918. Not all women. You have to be 30 and over and you have to own property. So that does really bring it down to better off women who are able to own property. And it's not till 1928 that we get the vote on the same footing as men. In the 1920s, she and her sister Bamba went to India again. And this time it was a very different trip, because this time people knew she was going, and she and her sister were absolutely mobbed by the crowds. They had come to see Ranjit Singh's granddaughters. They'd come to see the Maharaja's daughters. And wherever they went, they were just mobbed by people. People were so excited to see them.
Oh, my God.
And she also helped, because her fame, you know, her sort of fame as a, not just a, you know, Maharaja's daughter, but also her fame as a famous suffragette had reached India. And so she boosted female suffrage in India as well. So there was, you know, this, her role is kind of multifaceted.
Gosh, you can imagine the excitement, can't you?
Yeah.
The excitement to see them.
I know. And then after World War One, she joined the Suffragette Fellowship. And Emmeline Pankhurst, as you know, eventually as all these things happened, died in 1928, shortly before women got the right to vote on the same basis. She knew it was happening, but, you know, shortly before it actually became law. And then Sophia became president of the committee, and she was a member until she died in 1948. So really fascinating lady, and just, you know, somebody that you would not expect from that background of partying and being that kind of person to go on and do that. So there we go. That's Sophia Dudley Singh.
Wow, what an incredible woman.
Yeah.
I'm so surprised that, you know, I've done quite a lot of research here and there when it comes to the suffragette movement, and just haven't come across her name. Like, she clearly played such an important role. Wow.
Absolutely. I mean, she was seven in her 70s when she died, so she had a really good innings. As far as I'm aware, she didn't marry. And she, when she died, she was living in a place in Buckinghamshire, which was a house that was owned by her other sister, not Bamba. What's her other sister? Oh, Catherine. That, I think that was her name. Catherine? I think it was. And she was then cremated at Golders Green Crematorium. And one of the things that she'd wanted is that she had said that she wanted to be cremated according to the, you know, the normal way that you would in the Sikh faith. Her grandfather, you know, that's her faith. And then her ashes, she wanted them to be spread in India. So she's, yeah, her ashes are in India, spread somewhere.
Wow.
Which I think is very interesting for somebody who was born here, but very clearly felt that pull back to where her roots were.
Gosh, what an incredible woman.
Yeah.
There's so many wonderful images that you described. I mean, just even her outside Hampton Court Palace, which was her home, where you've got so much history entwined with the royal family, and then she's there handing out these flyers, votes for women.
And there is a photo of her, which I'm showing Emily.
Oh, wow. Oh, look at her. And we will put up.
So she's sitting there. She's against the fence. She's got her big thick coat on and her hat, looking fabulous.
A huge sandwich board.
Yeah.
Goodness me.
Selling that paper.
She looks like a very determined woman.
Very determined. She's got that steely look about her, hasn't she?
Wow.
So that's Fadi Loop Singh. So that's the kind of the end of that.
Love that.
I mean, you know, two generations of the same family, which have quite a lot of... a lot of history, a lot of happenings in just those two generations. Yeah.
Wow. Thank you, Alex.
That's my pleasure.
Podcast Pedestal.
Gosh, I have so many different things that could potentially be Podcast Pedestal, but because this was your week, you go first.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I think there's two things for me, really. It's either... when her dad kind of tries to go back and ends up, you know, they don't get there. But I think that's possibly the start of her realising her roots. But I mean, realistically, I think for me, it's going to have to be the Delhi Durbar that she goes to.
Mm.
Where she goes to India for the first time. She sees what's going on. She sees all the kind of pomp and pageantry of the royal bit. But she then suddenly sees... the people of her country, that, you know, her kind of roots and her sort of rightful country, that in theory she should have been then queen of. And she sees them in a very different light and suddenly kind of realises that awakening, I think, is, so I think that for me, that's the one.
Yes, that is a very good one. That is a very, very good one.
Very, very good one.
But I think I'm going to go with her jumping... Did you say it was on the Prime Minister's car?
Yeah, Prime Minister's, the front of his car,
jumping onto the windscreen. Prime Minister's windscreen
with this leaflet just sort of smushed
bang
into the window.
You can imagine really quick. Like,
and you can imagine just her you know, steely face just being like, look at this.
Exactly right in his eyes.
Yeah. I like to imagine it being Boris Johnson. That gives me some
what are you doing?
Some comfort.
yeah, I think I'm going to go for that.
Yeah. Good call. Good choice. I like that.
Mm.
Quite a brave thing to do.
That's wonderful, Alex. Thank you.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Mm. She's a really interesting lady, and I love talking about people who slip through the gaps a little bit. And she's one of those people who has started to be talked about a bit, in the same way that 5-10 years ago Mary Seacole wasn't being talked about and now is. I imagine, I don't know if Dorothy Fire is going to have the same trajectory that Mary Seacole did. I'd like to think she would, but yeah, I like kind of talking about those people and discovering them a little bit.
Yeah, Fabulous. Love it, babe. Love it.
Well, that's it for this week. Next week, as we say, we are going to do a...
Oh, yes, we're not spinning the wheel. Special. Put the wheel away, Emily. Put the wheel away.
Give that finger a rest. Yes, we're going we'll do a coronation special, I think, because there are some pretty good stories all about the coronations. Let's do that.
Great.
Wonderful. Thank you all so much for coming and listening this week, gang. We really appreciate it. We will see you next week and have a great week. And we'll see you on the Platinum Jubilee week.
Woo! Enjoy, everyone. Big love.
Bye.